It is Friday.
We made it.
TGIF.
We made it.
Yay!
You know, I'm amazed every single day of how aggressive people are at driving.
Oh, at the time of the morning, too.
Especially at 5:30 in the morning.
Yes, yes.
This guy was coming in my lane no matter what I did. So I better slow down.
It's crazy.
It is nuts how fast everyone goes.
Everybody's going fast. I'm on the lodge every morning, and let me tell you, it's almost like the Autobahn.
I know, but we made it, and hopefully everyone out there is
safely changing
lanes.
Yes.
Except for that one pickup truck. welcome to the Friday morning show, where there's always a lot of news, and there is once again. John Bolton officially indicted. 18 counts of retaining and transmitting classified information dating back to his time when he was working for Trump the first time.
Yeah.
He allegedly shared information with family members who didn't have security clearances. And of course, he's being lumped in with Tish James and James Comey. But this one is a little different. It was brought earlier.
Yes.
It was brought during Biden. You know, they started investigating it then.
Mm-hmm.
This has a lot more weight.
It does.
18 counts. He could spend a lot of time in prison.
Yes.
So there are differences here.
There are differences. And, you know, I'm sure his lawyers will try for that malicious prosecution claim. But, you know, the president didn't name him when he named the others in that Truth Social post to Pam Bondi. So I don't know. He may be able to use it, but I think it's a little different.
The other difference is this is brought by experienced prosecutors. U.S. Attorney Kelly O'Hayes has served in the District of Maryland since 2013. A nonpartisan career prosecutor, Tom Sullivan, is another one on
it.
So these are experienced people who've signed on this, and it's very serious. And so now comes this case, and Abby Lowell is the lawyer for Bolton, and they say they're going to fight it. Another thing we're talking about are these strikes on these boats in the Caribbean. Have you seen all this?
I've seen it. And you know, the president is, and there's also some boots on the ground or CIA operatives over in Venezuela as well.
It seems like an escalation for sure when it comes to Venezuela and what's happening here. People are saying that a regime change is what is wanted.
Yes.
No one has confirmed that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But another little wrinkle here is the head of the U.S. military Southern Command is stepping down. His name's Admiral Alvin Halsey. He's leaving less than a year into his tenure as the Pentagon is escalating these attacks against these boats in the Caribbean Sea. And then some people are coming out and saying, those people weren't Venezuelan. They were my family members.
Oh, wow.
So that is definitely escalating. And we're going to talk about it coming up on our show at 6:19.
Well, the owner of a Clinton Township building that exploded last year, killing a 19-year-old man, has been ordered to stand trial on involuntary manslaughter. A judge ruled yesterday following preliminary hearings held over several months with enough evidence found to advance Noor Noel Kesto's case. The March 4th, 2024 explosion at a building housing goo and select distributors sent metal shrapnel flying up a mile away. Turner Salter, just a quarter of a mile from the blast, he was struck and killed. Investigators say the building contained nitrous oxide, butane canisters, and lighter fluid, materials not permitted under the building's certificate of occupancy. Employees testified they had no formal training handling hazardous materials and emphasized that they were careful but unprepared for the risk. And Kestow was arrested back in April of last year in New York after authorities learned he had a plane ticket out of the country. Now, prosecutors say the evidence is now sufficient to take the case to trial.
That was crazy when that exploded. And just an innocent bystander was walking.
19-year-old hit by shrapnel. Also, there's this audit, Jamie. A new audit of the Michigan's sex offender registry has uncovered some significant accuracy issues, including potential thousands of incorrect addresses for registered offenders. The report released yesterday by the Office of the Auditor General reviewed the state's database, which tracks roughly 44,000 offenders as of July 2024. In a random sample of 60 registrants, 9% had addresses that didn't match their state ID records, a discrepancy that could affect more than 2,700 people statewide. Michigan State Police acknowledged that they only verify addresses when offenders first register or move to or from the state, and there is currently no legal requirement to cross-check addresses with other government databases. MSP says it agrees with many of the audit's findings and is exploring ways to improve the accuracy of the registry to better protect the public.
What's the point of the registry if the addresses are wrong?
Exactly. You want to know if there's someone in your neighborhood that, you know, is unsavory, and, you know, that person could be there and could have moved there and then left and went somewhere else.
That's what I was going to say. What's preventing people from registering an address and then moving?
Exactly. Because nobody's checking, it seems. You know,
that
where
makes
they're going.
Zero sense to me.
Yeah. So let's hope they get that straightened out.
Okay. There's a huge rally planned. Have you heard about it?
Yeah, all over the country.
No Kings rallies. They're to be held at more than 2,500 locations nationwide on October 18th, which is tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And they say, those who, you know, hold all this together, that these protests are meant as a celebration of free speech, the right to assemble, and First Amendment overall, and that it's an opportunity to push back on some of the moves from the Trump administration. Now there's a back and forth of what this really is, this protest. First, let's talk about some local lawmakers. At least Alyssa Slotkin is our local senator. She was on Instagram. I saw this yesterday. And she joined a couple of others who served in the military in different factions. Ruben Gallego, Mark Kelly, Chris DeLuzio, Jason Crow. They made this Instagram video that I saw saying, this is what the No Kings rally really is.
You may be sitting at home quietly,
concerned, angry
about the direction of our country.
So let's exercise our freedoms and make clear that this is out of a deep sense of patriotism,
love of country,
and collective desire to make our country better.
Now is the time to make your voice heard.
Let's do what we do best.
Let's wear the red, white, and blue.
Let's wave the flag.
Do it peacefully and nonviolently.
If you're a concerned veteran
or just a patriotic American,
we need you to show up at this rally and march
for the America we all love.
Sign up at nokings.org.
Because this is our country, and we need to fight for it.
Because America.
Because America.
Because America.
Because America has no king.
That was Slotkin there at the end. Yeah. Did you hear them say, because we love America?
Right, but the other side says...
That's why they put that out. Yeah. Because this week, Lisa McLean, who is also a local lawmaker for us, she has said this on Capitol Hill.
And now they're gearing up for their I Hate America rally this weekend. A rally where they'll cheer for chaos instead of country. So take note of what goes on at that rally. Take note of how they put Americans first, really.
Yeah.
So it's a war of words.
It is.
At least right now. And we'll see what these rallies really hold.
Right. And they've rallied like this before. I think they had the No Kings and it was no issue. There was no problem. So we'll see.
We'll see. It's supposed to be the largest in
this
modern history.
This will be largest now because of a lot of the things that are going on.
Right.
Yeah.
And one more thing. It's the 10th anniversary of something wild that happened at Michigan Stadium. Listen.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
I was at that game. That was unbelievable. Michigan just had to take the snap, punt it away, and win the game. That's not what happened. Jalen Watts Jackson's 38-yard return of that fumble of the punter. And Michigan State won that game. And Harbaugh faces that kid's face in the stands where he has his hands on his head.
That. Yes.
Yeah. It's the 10th anniversary of that moment. So I thought I'd bring that up to the forefront.
Some people probably don't want to remember that.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Okay. Coming up next on JR Morning, we are going to talk about these strikes on these boats in the Caribbean. What's legal? What isn't? What's happening? And what could happen in the future? 619.
Welcome back to JR Morning. The White House has confirmed that President Donald Trump has authorized the CIA to conduct covert operations inside Venezuela, a move that's drawing some sharp criticism from that country's leadership and raising questions about U.S. involvement in the region. Now, to help us understand what this could mean on the ground and how covert operations like this typically unfold, we're joined by retired DEA Special Agent Steve Murphy, one of the agents who famously brought down Colombian drug lord Pablo Escobar. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, guys. I appreciate you having me on the show again.
I'm wondering, you know, how unusual is it for a U.S. president to publicly acknowledge covert intelligence operations, especially in a politically volatile country like Venezuela?
You know, I asked that same question. I don't understand why we're giving up, you know, we're showing our cards on the table before the game's over. I think we share too much information to start with, but it seems like it's been taken to a whole new precedent here.
I have a question about, you know, the war on drugs and the president, the administration saying these boats are carrying drugs and we have to take them out to protect our citizens. But what about intercepting the boats when they get into American waters, and what you think of these strikes in international waters?
Well, what I think about the strikes is I'm not disappointed, to be quite honest with you. I think maybe this is long overdue. Waiting until they get into American waters, it's so vast. It's, you know, you really have to go out over an ocean and experience trying to spot something in an open ocean as small as a boat, or even if you get into these semi-submersibles, which, you know, they provide a lower profile than a boat does, mm-hmm. in the ocean, it's almost impossible. It really is. You would think, well, you see on the news where the Coast Guard sends out rescue missions when a boat is missing, and they have a horrible time trying to locate the vessels. It's just so fast. So I would not be in favor of waiting till they get in American waters, just simply because that's getting way too close.
The administration says that these moves are part of a crackdown on drug trafficking, but Venezuela's, you know, their actual role in the regional drug trade is pretty, you know, small. Does that reasoning hold up to you, or might there be something else at play?
No, I think that Venezuela is finally getting the recognition that's deserved when it comes to drug trafficking. You know, it borders Colombia. It's been a long, I mean, even when I was in Colombia back in the early 1990s, Venezuela was being used as a staging point because Colombia was the focus of American operations. So obviously you want to take that out of the focus. We have a better chance of succeeding. You see what Maduro is doing down there. Nicolas Maduro, their dictator. He's not a president.
Right.
I don't think anybody would argue that. But why isn't he doing anything to stop this other than grandstanding? I'm not a politician, but it seems like he could be doing a lot more to stop the problem.
That's for sure. It's an overall problem. I'm just wondering about these strikes on these boats and how that's sort of a military operation. When isn't it usually just a crime, like a drug crime, not a military operation, and using these strikes as a military operation?
Well, that's one of the big questions. You know, you get the pundits out there, especially other governments and politicians on one side of the aisle that want to question everything that the current administration is mm-hmm. doing. And this isn't new. This goes on with every administration. It's just that the current administration is much more vocal and much more public with what they're doing. Having said that, the Tren de Aragua has been designated as a foreign terrorist organization, that kind of changes the rules, the way things can be done. What's legal, what's not legal, honestly, I don't know. I read the UN Charter and you read about what's happened in the past. Honestly, I'm happy that we're taking some proactive action against these drug traffickers. If you look at the boats that are being destroyed, and I think I saw this morning when I woke up, I believe there's a new one. It looks like it might have been a semi-submersible that was targeted last night. Mm-hmm. If you look at the boats that are being destroyed, look at the engines on the back of them, because a fishing boat does not have 3 and 4 high-powered motors on the back of it. They can't afford it because they're poor fishermen, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at compare that now to pictures of fishing boats, and they're all over the media. I looked this morning, you know, and they're interviewing fishermen on the coast of Venezuela now, mm-hmm. and most of their boats are little outboards with handheld throttles on them, whereas the drug boats, they have a console, and I mean, they're much more advanced technologically. It's not just a simple fishing boat. And I mean, there's, you know, why do you need to go out 100 miles off coast in a known drug trafficking route to fish? The ocean's vast.
That's true.
It just doesn't all add up. Doesn't all add up.
The math's not mathing, right? Yeah.
Exactly. That's the way to put it.
If the intelligence used to justify the strikes is flawed or incomplete, as has happened, we know that's happened in the past, who's going to bear the accountability when people's lives are lost in this name of counter-narcotics?
That's a good question. Honestly, personally, you know, and this is Steve Murphy's opinion.
Uh-huh.
I think that our intel has always done a fantastic job. Our mistakes made, yes, but this is such a high-profile thing. I think they're probably going out of their way to confirm over and over again that, yes, this is legitimate intelligence. We're not hearing what the sources are, and I hope we never do, but they're giving up so much secret information now, you never know.
Right.
I think that it's gone over and over and over again to determine, yes, this is a legitimate target.
So quickly here in the last minute, your takeaway of these strikes that have been talked about publicly, what's your takeaway?
Again, I think it's long overdue. I read where there may be some survivors on this latest attack on the boat. I saw where a couple of people were not Venezuelan. They were from Trinidad or Tobago. Mm-hmm. And I did a little research on that, and I found back in September, the prime minister of Trinidad and Tobago, her statement was, "I have no sympathy for traffickers. The U.S. military should kill them all violently." Now, there hasn't been an update on that since September 3rd from her, but I honestly don't have a problem with it. We've got to do something to address the drug problem differently in our country. As you guys have heard me talk about in the past, I'm a big proponent of let's address the demand problem here in our own country, because if we can drop the demand, the supply will go away.
Steve Murphy, retired DEA special agent, we appreciate you coming on, giving your insight on this. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. I appreciate you guys.
Coming up, more JR Morning here on a Friday, 760 WJR.
Welcome back to JR Morning. Big meeting today between President Trump and President Zelensky, the future of the war. Zelensky was quoted as saying that he thinks the momentum of what happened in the Middle East could push his war with Russia in the right direction, meaning over soon.
Yes.
President Trump had a call with Putin yesterday, and they talked about this idea of sending Tomahawk missiles, cruise missiles to Ukraine. Obviously, Putin heard that because Trump talked about it all week.
Uh-huh.
It seemed like Trump dimmed the prospects that they would send those after this call. And they also plan to meet each other.
That's a second meeting, another meeting?
Yes. There's going to be a coming meeting with Vladimir Putin in Budapest to discuss ending the war in Ukraine.
Okay.
So it looks like
Just like
Putin didn't like the words coming out of the president's mouth, made a call, and now things have tempered a little bit. We'll see what happens with Zelensky in the Oval. I just hope Zelensky wears the right thing.
Well, if he doesn't, we'll hear about it. They met in Alaska, red carpet, the whole deal. And, you know, I felt like the president was tricked. And then, you know, he's going to meet again. You know who you're dealing with now. You know you're dealing with Putin. Now, those Tomahawks, if they were to get those Tomahawks, I mean, they would be able to strike deep into to Russia. But they wouldn't. I can't imagine that Ukraine would hit civilian targets like Russia has been hitting. They would hit more military targets with those.
That's what Jack Keane said this week.
Okay.
Yeah. And Zelensky's saying Putin is certainly no braver than Hamas or any other terrorists. The language of strength and justice will inevitably work against Russia as well. We can already see that Moscow is rushing to resume dialogue as soon as it hears about Tomahawks. That's what Zelensky said.
Okay.
So that's the latest there. We'll see how this meeting goes on Friday, which is today, later on today, with the president.
You remember Hillary Doe. She was appointed by the governor a couple of years ago to focus on reversing the state's population growth. She was the first ever chief growth officer, and she's now stepped down. She's left her post, and she is starting her own group called the Michigan Institute for Growth and Opportunity, or MIGO. And she says it will be the first statewide organization focused on population growth that will research the issue and help communities develop strategies to grow. She says it's important to have an entity to tackle Michigan's population challenges outside of state government.
So it seems like the same kind of work.
Just
like doing her own thing.
But doing it her way,
Well, maybe we could get her on to talk about it.
Absolutely. Got to get Hillary What Up Doe.
Yeah, you always say that to her.
Yes.
Do you hear the story of J.B. Pritzker made a lot of money?
Man, he's
I mean, he already has a lot of money. But he made a lot of money,
nice
too.
Nice little gambler here.
$1.4 million playing blackjack in Las Vegas last year. This is all according to his tax returns. Quote, "I went on vacation with my wife and some friends. I was incredibly lucky. You have to be to end up ahead, frankly, going into a casino anywhere. It was in Las Vegas, and I like to play cards," he said. He's already a billionaire, and he told reporters, "Gambling isn't good, but should, you know, if you like it, if you have the money, you know."
Yeah.
But you have to have money to win money.
Well,
so I'm sure he bet a lot.
Well, listen, you know, a lot of people talk about how much money they've won, but they don't ever tell you about how much money they lost.
Right.
Before they won.
Right.
You know, and I can go to Vegas and pull the slots. I'm not going to win $1.4 million.
The governor said he'll be donating the money to charity. That's according to his campaign, that he doesn't need the $1.4 million.
No, you wouldn't think so. He's a billionaire.
Apparently, he also likes to play poker. And, so he's pretty good at doing those things in Vegas. Let's go to Vegas with J.B. Pritzker.
I know, that's right. Yeah, that's a nice trip.
I was thinking about this yesterday.
Okay.
I love an estate sale.
So do I.
Whenever I see the sign, I'm like turning the car and I'm going to park. I went into the estate sale, and like, I think the minute you walk into an estate sale, you know if it's a yay or a nay.
Okay.
I knew immediately this was a no for me.
Okay.
But I didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. So I did the courtesy walk through the house to look at all the knickknacks.
You didn't just turn around and walk back out?
No, because I felt like that would hurt their feelings.
Okay.
Like, you walk in, you're like, ew, and you walk back out.
Right.
I'm wondering, what do you do to save feelings of others when you know it's not really for you?
Well, it depends on the situation. I mean, if, you know, I think we've all been in situations where we see a little baby, you know, and everybody say all babies are cute.
Well,
all babies are not, okay? So let's just put that out there. All babies are not. And so, you know, you see, you know, you're not going to tell a person, oh, your baby. So you just say, oh, you know, bless your heart.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. That's a beautiful outfit she has on, or he has on.
This is a Seinfeld episode about this.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. Look at the baby. And they're all like, ooh. Renee's laughing. Do you ever save anyone's feelings, like when you knew like the situation wasn't for you?
My go-to is, I really love that for you.
There you go.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Beth Ann, anything?
Mine's the same. I kind of just like start a conversation with them and then just like slowly kind of like move on to the next thing.
Yeah. My husband doesn't really like small talk.
Okay.
So sometimes he leaves me. He'll just like start backing up.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm left in the small talk because I don't want to hurt feelings.
Yeah. You're such a sweetheart.
One time we were at the Grand Hotel at the pool at the spa
yeah,
hot
uh-huh.
tub thing.
Uh-huh.
And this guy was talking to me, my ear off, about certain things. And okay. My husband was there. He left. So now it's just me, my brother, and this guy. And then, like, I made my exit. So now my brother, who's nicer than me, stayed in this hot tub with this stranger.
And had to suffer?
Yeah. And just talked and talked and talked.
God. Yeah, I think everybody has been in a situation where they've had to do that.
Well, if anyone has. You could text us.
Yeah, text us, let us know. But I'm sure, you know, somebody's driving the car right now. And they're like, yep, did that yesterday.
Exactly. And I talked about this earlier, but it's the 10-year anniversary of that special, special game at Michigan Stadium.
Oh, my God. Some people just don't want to remember that.
I know. I got some texts. Did you have to bring that up? Well, yeah, because it was like one of the greatest games ever. The trouble with the snap.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
It was so crazy. The punter, Blake O'Neill, all he had to do was, like, take the snap, kick it away. Michigan wins that game.
Right.
When they had lost to Michigan State a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what happened. Jalen Watts Jackson picked up that fumble, ran it all the way back. Michigan State won 27-23 to win at number 12 Michigan. It was the craziest ending I've ever seen or been a part of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's history there. And, you know, some things you don't want to remember. But, I mean, that was a big deal.
It was crazy. And The Athletic did a whole look back on this. Joe Rexroad wrote about it 10 years later. He talked to a dozen people who were involved with that day, where they are now, what they're doing. I had interviewed Jalen Watts Jackson before. I tried to get him on the show today.
Uh-huh.
He didn't get back to me, but.
They don't want to remember.
Yes, he does.
Oh, he wants
He's
to remember?
The one that ran it back.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah.
All right, coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, your chance to win $1,000. That sounds fun.
Oh, absolutely.
You could buy tickets to crazy games like that if you have $1,000.
Yes.
So we're going to give away that word, the national keyword, in the 8 o'clock hour. You're going to stick with us to hear that so you can win $1,000. And then coming up on our show, we're going to talk about this No Kings rally, this war of the worlds. God, it's Friday. War of words when it comes to the No Kings rally.
Yes.
And sort of what it is, what's being planned. We're going to talk to a political scientist about that. Now it's time for Automotive Views with Mike Martinez, brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at MichiganBusiness.org.
Missing the mark on electric vehicle demand has been a costly mistake for Detroit's automakers. General Motors this week said it'll take a $1.6 billion hit to third quarter earnings after scaling back EV production, and could incur more such charges in the future. Ford's decision last year to cancel a long-planned three-row EV crossover in Canada cost it $1.9 billion. To be sure, the regulatory and political landscapes have shifted significantly since they made these plans. President Trump's tariffs, decision to cut federal incentives, and easing of emissions regulations all made EVs less viable. But even without those factors, automakers vastly overestimated just how much the public would want EVs. While the technology makes a lot of sense for some, executives are coming to understand that the market, at least in the US, is way smaller than they thought. It's just a shame they had to waste a few billion dollars to realize it. With this week's Automotive View, I'm Mike Martinez with Automotive News.
And now they're gearing up for their I Hate America rally.
So we are talking about this No Kings rally, and that was Lisa McClain talking about the No Kings rally, this sort of war of words when it comes to now they're saying that this rally is a I Hate America rally. So, you know, trying to rebrand what's happening tomorrow, but it's supposed to be a very big
patriotic
rally. Yeah.
Rally.
We'll wait and see if it is patriotic,
right,
but I know it's going to be big. Dave Duleo, director of the Center for Civic Engagement at Oakland University, joins us now. Hello, Dave.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So what do you foresee happening here? We know that a lot of people are going to show up. Will it be peaceful? Will it be what some of the lawmakers say is going to be just a sort of a pushback on the administration?
Well, first of all, we hope that it's peaceful. And I think that the heightened tensions in politics today make that less certain. And that's a hard thing to say and a hard thing to talk about, but it's kind of a fact on the ground, right? So number one, we hope it's peaceful. I think that there are so many of these individual protests that are going to be across the country that it's hard to say with a blanket statement what they're going to be like, right? I think that there's probably a dozen or so that are going to happen in our region here in Southeast Michigan, from Ann Arbor to Rochester to Farmington, so and hundreds others in other states, right? So I think that each one is likely to have its own flavor.
You know, we've seen waves of protest in recent years, Dave, but, you know, organizers say the anger level is way higher now. What changed politically and socially to drive that intensity?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question. There's no doubt that there's a sense of anger and true anger, right? Not just sort of fake anger or play anger, or sort of on display.
Yeah.
But it's real, right? And I think that comes from the vitriol and rancor that has been just being turned up in our politics going on a decade, right? And I think that it's reaching this fever pitch.
And a lot of participants say they've never protested before, but they feel compelled that they should do it. What does that say about the health of civic engagement when people who were quiet at one time are not stepping into the streets?
Well, I think a couple things. Number one, protest is something that has been part of the fabric of our country for, well, since the founding, right? I mean, we think about the folks who rose up and stood against the king before the Revolution and before the Declaration of Independence, and you know, they were engaged in protest and were just voicing their concerns and their grievances. I think that we can make a connection between today and back then, but you know, that there are people who are being, they say, called to let their voice be heard, and that's democracy in action, right? I mean, it's part of our system.
What about the politics of this? The GOP saying this is an I Hate America rally, trying to change the name.
Well, I think for sure everybody is trying to advance their agenda, right? And messaging like that certainly will aid Republicans with that in some corners, right? Not not others, but I think that you know, they are trying to talk to their base. And even to try to reach some in the middle who are maybe inclined to support Republicans as opposed to Democrats. But you know, certainly the No Kings moniker is trying to certainly speak to the Democratic base and the progressive wing of the party in a unique way. And I think that Republicans are doing the same thing.
Speaking with Dave Duleo, director of the Center for Civic Engagement at Oakland University. And Dave, I'm wondering, is this type of activism, this type of protest, while it can be powerful, does it deepen the divide instead of bridging the divide?
I think it can, Lloyd, and I think that, you know, I would even push back on your first comment there. I'm not sure what real impact it has beyond getting people who are already on one side or the other dug into their position, right, and further into their corner. The Democratic base, you know, we know that they don't like Trump and they never will. Republican base, we know that they like Trump and they always will. But those folks in the middle, they're sort of up in the air, right? And the interesting part is they're probably not even paying attention to these protests or the messaging that's going back and forth on either side.
But there is something American about hitting the streets and peacefully protesting. That's allowed.
Oh, it's not only is it allowed, but as we said before, right, it's part of the fabric of our country. There's no doubt about it, right? I mean, this is First Amendment and democracy in action, right, playing out in front of our eyes.
Well, we'll wait and see, and hopefully it is peaceful and it doesn't devolve into something at these 2,600 sites where this is happening across the country tomorrow. Dave Duleo, thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I just don't want, National Guardsmen, you know, which are deployed in some cities right now. I don't, you know, and I'm sure there'll be these protests in those cities that it doesn't turn into something
right
more than what it is.
Right. And there's a suggestion that some of these people could be paid actors.
True.
And I've read some reports for, you know, some like librarian from Chicago who wants to join the protest. She's not one of those.
No.
Right.
No.
All right. Coming up on JR Morning, lots to discuss. Lloyd, what do you have coming up?
I will tell you about a situation in Hamtramck. Somebody's in trouble.
Uh-oh. John Bolton also in trouble. We'll talk about it 7:05. Happy Friday.
It
we made it.
Friday.
We all did it.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Chris is overseas having a good time.
Yes, he is still on his European wing of his adventure, and we hope he's having a lovely time. We're holding down the fort here, talking about a lot of things, including another President Trump foe being indicted, and that is John Bolton for his handling of classified information, The FBI's investigation into Bolton began before Trump's return to the White House.
So this is a little
so
different.
So this feels a little different.
Yeah.
Finding that he shared classified information, allegedly, with some family members, like gearing up to write this book. An official's career prosecutors have signed off on this, and they consider this case to be on stronger footing than the other two, the James Comey and the Tish James.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure his lawyers are going to, you know, try to go for that, you know, throw this out because it's malicious prosecution, but I don't think that will stick. I think Comey and Letitia James may have a better chance of that because he named them in that Truth Social post to Pam Bondi saying, you know, what's going on. So they may have a better chance, but I don't think Bolton can have a – I don't think his chances are good with that.
According to these court papers, he shared with two relatives more than 1,000 pages of diary-like entries that contain classified information. This is about his daily activities. And they made some gestures when they were talking back and forth about how they have to, like, keep it quiet and things like
that.
Why
would you do that, though?
And then Iranian hackers got into his personal email account, and some more stuff was exposed. So that's what's in this. And Abby Lowell says we're going to fight it, and Bolton says he's going to fight it, but it just seems like a stronger case than the other two.
Hamtramck City Council member Mohammed Hassan, one step closer to trial after a judge ruled there's enough evidence he forged an absentee ballot application in 2023. Prosecutors say Hassan filed the application in the name of Zirin Sultana, claiming he was helping her submit it. But Sultana testifies she never requested a ballot, never signed the form, and doesn't even vote. She doesn't even vote. Handwriting analysis by Michigan State Police confirmed the signature wasn't hers, and the judge determined Hassan knowingly signed it. Hassan now faces multiple felony charges, including election law forgery and making false statements on a ballot application. This case is part of a broader investigation into alleged election misconduct at Hamtramck City Hall, which also involves Councilmember Mustatin Sadman, who faces separate election fraud charges and is set for a preliminary hearing this Monday.
Well, that's not a good look.
No.
No, not at all. Okay, so you're going to keep an eye on that as that moves forward.
Absolutely, I will. Also, there's a popular residential incentive program for downtown Detroit that could make a comeback next year. The Downtown Detroit Partnership is considering restarting its Live Downtown program, which previously ran from 2011 to 2016. It offered cash rewards to new residents who worked at select downtown employers. Now, Eric Larson, the partnership CEO, says the goal isn't to fill vacant units currently at 17%, but to continue the momentum downtown has seen over the past decade. He says most regions have about 4% of their population living in the core city. We have less than 1%. With over 4 million people living in and around Detroit, there's an opportunity to have more of them living downtown. Now, funding for the incentives, which could mirror the original programs, $2,500 for renters, $25,000 for home buyers, still needs to be secured from private and philanthropic sources. Previous programs, including Midtown Detroit's Live Midtown and Stay Midtown, targeted both new residents and existing renters, but has since ended.
So they're trying to incentivize people living downtown. I thought people already wanted to do that.
Well, yeah, but they said, you know, only 4% of the city's population is living downtown. Well, 4% of the population living in the core city, they have less than 1%. We have less than 1%. So we're trying to get it up to at least
4%. Try to get more. And there's probably some vacant units available.
But, I mean, you know, you talk about affordable housing, and that's what the mayor's candidates are talking about. But, you know, affordable for who sometimes?
Right.
They're not that affordable.
We are in day 17 of the government shutdown, and Mike Johnson still hasn't called people back to the House. I think that's a negotiating tool. And here he is talking about the government shutdown.
We need 5 reasonable Democrats in the Senate to do the right thing and vote to keep the lights on so that we can continue all the debates and all the outstanding issues. We have a lot of things to do, but they've turned the lights off, and real people are hurting.
And for the 10th time, they brought up the vote in the Senate, and that failed. So now we're into double digits, and now we're still shut down, and people are not getting paid. And there's this whole thing on TikTok, like hashtag federal workers, people talking about their daily lives, furloughed, and not getting paid.
Yeah, it was a guy yesterday, or the day before yesterday, on a one of the channels, and they had a town hall meeting, and he was like, listen, I'm a federal worker. I work at the airport. I think he was the air traffic controller. He says, I got to go do DoorDash when I leave
here.
you know.
That was that Stephen A. Smith thing.
Yeah, and yeah. Stephen A. got upset and left off the stage. But, yeah, this guy, you know, I still have to pay my daughter's tuition.
Right.
I got to do something.
Everyone has bills.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel for these people that are not getting paid right now. Finally, it's a big weekend as runners hit the streets.
Yes.
Of our country and another one for the Detroit Marathon, including Beth Ann. You ready to go?
I am so ready. I'm getting to the point where, like, I'm ready to do this and maybe not do it again.
So you and, like, 26,000 of your closest friends are going to run this marathon.
Yeah, we have a group chat going on. We're all excited.
Okay. And there's some road closures and stuff. If you're thinking of coming downtown, you should look that up because there are going to be people like Beth Ann running past.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're excited for you. Are you ready?
I'm feeling ready. I definitely this week I've hit a point where I'm like, I'm just ready to kind of get this done. I had a lot of motivation this week too because the Chicago one just happened one just happened in Berlin as well. So like my TikTok has been like flooded with videos of people who like accomplished that. So that gave me a lot more motivation of like, I can do this. I can get this done and I can be just like these people.
Wow.
Well, we're going to have a star amongst us here.
Yeah. 26.2 miles.
Yes.
And Monroe Streets, Jefferson Avenue, Grand River, Woodward, all of these have portions that will be closed for these runners. And the Ambassador Bridge will have restricted traffic. And the Detroit-Windsor Tunnel will be closed 6:15 to 10:15 a.m. on Sunday.
That's all. Use the people mover.
Yes, you can use the people mover. All right, coming up next on JR Morning, we are going to be talking about this government shutdown more in depth. The politics of it, and the real people who are affected. That's at 7:19. Now it's time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rock your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
In purchasing online, I use Google or a comparable search engine to find it, of course. Well, at least that's the way you used to do it over the last couple of decades. But now, that's all changing. This week, Walmart announced a partnership with OpenAI that will enable its customers to shop and purchase products through what's known as agentic commerce. What is it? As explained by Performance Marketing Insider, agentic commerce uses artificial intelligence and conversations to predict, plan, and learn what customers want. It turns ChatGPT into a personalized shopping assistant that no doubt is the future. President and CEO of Walmart, Doug McMillon, views the shift to agentic commerce as a move that will eventually end the use of search bars for product discovery in its marketplace. McMillon wrote this in a post on Walmart's website. For many years now, e-commerce shopping experiences have consisted of a search bar and a long list of item responses. That's about to change, he says. There's a native AI experience coming that is multimedia, personalized, and contextual. Walmart's agentic AI shopping assistant will help consumers find products, compare prices and items, and get personalized recommendations. And Walmart's not the only retailer to test and use agentic shopping agents. Amazon, eBay, Target, Sephora, and Williams-Sonoma, the list goes on and on, are following a similar path to upgrade customer experience. And consumer adoption of this new technology is increasing quickly. Traffic to U.S. retail sites from agentic AI browsers and chat services increased 4,700% year over year from July 2024 to July 2025. That according to Adobe. So just like that, the thing that changed everything, the ability to search for anything at your fingertips online, is now being displaced right before our eyes by a superior technology and experience, begging the question, who needs search anymore? I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, the source for everything you need to start and grow your own business. And that's today's Business Beat on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
Welcome back to WJR in the morning here. You are going to have a chance to win $1,000 in our 8 o'clock hour. That sounds good to me.
Always.
I wish I could win.
So do I.
All you have to do is wait for the word we're going to give you in the 8 o'clock hour and then text it to us and you could win $1,000. And you have five chances to do it. So we're calling it $5,000 a day on 760 WJR.
A new Associated Press NORC poll shows that most Americans aren't pointing fingers at just one side of the ongoing government shutdown. They're blaming everybody, Republicans, Democrats, and President Trump alike. The public frustration seems to run deep across party lines, reflecting growing disillusionment with Washington's gridlock. And to break down what this means politically and who might bear the long-term consequences, we're joined by Jason Rowe, principal of Rowe Strategic. Jason, good to have you back.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
So this latest poll shows something unusual. Americans are spreading the blame for the government shutdown almost evenly among Republicans, Democrats, and the president. What does that tell you about how frustrated voters are with D.C. right now?
Well, I think it's a reflection of the confusion. You know, when they hear Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries or John Thune, Donald Trump or Mike Johnson pointing fingers at the other party, I think they're getting to the point where they don't know which one is telling the truth about who's responsible. I will say that this is better news for Republicans than when it began, because I think Republicans were taking the blame initially. And I've always felt, since, you know, government shutdowns first started back in 1995, when Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House in a budget battle with President Clinton, that by default, Republicans kind of get the blame anytime there is a shutdown. I think the miscalculation by Democrats on this one is that as this drags on and voters do learn more, the Democrats are taking more of the blame. And I think that's some movement that we've seen in the polls in the last 2 weeks.
Jason, let's listen to Representative Johnson on the shutdown, then I'll ask you a question.
We need five reasonable Democrats in the Senate to do the right thing and vote to keep the lights on so that we can continue all the debates and all the outstanding issues. We have a lot of things to do, but they've turned the lights off, and real people are hurting.
So he said that they need five reasonable Democrats, but for the 10th time, this thing has failed in the Senate. Do you see an off-ramp here politically for either party?
Well, I think Jeffries and Schumer have unfortunately locked themselves in probably for another week of a shutdown. And the reason being, I think this was originally driven by their need to show their base that they're fighting Republicans. And so I don't think, you know, we're conflating two things in this debate publicly. One is the budget, which will fund the government through the next fiscal year, and the continuing resolution. And the vote that they have been blocking is the continuing resolution, mm-hmm. which would merely fund the government at the current levels while they negotiate the budget. And so the Democrats are using the continuing resolution to leverage their position in negotiating the budget. So it is the Democrats that are blocking. I mean, obviously, Republicans control the House and the Senate, but they can't pass anything in the Senate without 60 votes. And so that's what the speaker is referring to, is getting to that threshold of 60 votes requires a few Democrats to break from their party. But they've organized this No Kings rally in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. And so can you imagine if Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer capitulated at this point, that this No Kings rally targeting Trump tomorrow would immediately pivot to being about get rid of Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries. And so they've locked themselves in, and I don't foresee over the next week that after the No Kings rally and the boasting about what they're doing, that they're going to capitulate. So I think it's at least another week after this rally. And I don't think Democrats really hold much of a hand, because President Trump is eager to do the RIFs, the reductions in force, which is firings of government workers. These are predominantly Democrat constituencies. And, you know, Trump will replace them with people that are loyal to him. And so, you know, if there's pain to be felt, I think it's more than anyone, the government employees that are going to lose their jobs in this. And they're going to have Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries to thank for that.
Speaking with Jason Rowe, principal of Rowe Strategic on JR Morning. Jason, for both parties, I mean, does this kind of shared blame, does it make it harder to score political points, or does it just actually give each side cover to kind of dig in a little deeper?
You know, it's a battle, I guess, for cable television more than it is for the American people. You know, right now we haven't seen the average American feel any pain. And I think, you know, another miscalculation for Democrats is people may realize that government isn't as necessary at the size and scope that it is today as they have been led to believe. I think until Americans actually feel the impact, and that could be delays in Social Security checks or some benefits that they depend on to live their lives, I don't see the political calculation changing. And that's where I think Democrats lose their hand. And I don't think long term there is a political price to pay. The election is almost a year or more than a year away, and this will be long in the rearview mirror by the time we get to that election. Now, if we have to have a repeat performance of what's happening right now, right before the 2026 election, there is a political price to pay. But for right now, it is for either party a temporary, you know, drop in the polls and their image and you know, maybe even their competency. But, you know, at the end of the day, the Republicans hold the cards, and I don't think the Republican leadership cares one way or the other if the Democrats come along, because it's the Democrats that are losing in this.
We just have a minute left, but your interpretation of the GOP calling it the We Hate America rally, when there's going to be regular American citizens there, not just, you know, paid protesters, and the calculation there to rebrand it.
Well, you know, one thing that Trump certainly ushered in is figuring out ways to brand everything and, you know, put your message into what's going on. You know, just as it's a No Kings rally, you know, and it is. I mean, there's elements of the Democratic Party, and I kind of long dismissed that this existed, but there really is elements within the Democratic Party that don't respect the institutions of America and the culture and values of America. And I think we've seen that more and more over the last few years as the Democratic Party has gotten more progressive. So it's, you know, it's on brand for both parties. Not terribly surprising. It'll be interesting to see how many people turn out and what kind of coverage it gets and what's the message of it. And I'll be curious to see
if peaceful.
Chuck Schumer,
yeah.
And if Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries show up and what they say at this rally in the midst of this shutdown.
All right. Jason Rowe, principal of Rowe Strategic. Appreciate you coming on always with your insights. Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Coming up, I'll tell you about that building owner who owned that Clinton Township building that exploded last year. Well, he's going to be standing trial. I'll tell you more about that coming up next on JR Morning.
Welcome back to JR Morning on this Friday. Beautiful sunrise.
You see that sunrise
over downtown Detroit.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be a good day.
Yes, it is.
It's going to be a great day. There's a little update. The Pistons begin the season on October 22nd at Chicago. Then they're at Houston. The first time they're here at home is the 26th versus Boston. But I have an injury update on Jaden Ivey. And we know that Jaden Ivey suffered that fibula injury last year.
Yeah.
Well, he underwent arthroscopic procedure yesterday to relieve right knee discomfort. It's unrelated to his injury from last season, but he will begin rehabilitation immediately and be reevaluated in 4 weeks. So it's a setback for Jaden Ivey, and we won't see him for at least a month.
Yeah, well, as long as he comes back, you know.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Stronger than ever.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. The owner of that Clinton Township building that exploded last year, killing that 19-year-old man, he has been ordered to stand trial for involuntary manslaughter. Judge ruled yesterday following preliminary hearings held over several months with enough evidence found to advance Noor Noel Kestel's case. The March 4th, 2024 explosion at a building housing goo and select distributors sent metal shrapnel flying up to a mile away. Turner Salter, he's 19, he was a quarter of a mile away from the blast. He was struck by shrapnel and killed. Investigators say the building contained nitrous oxide, butane canisters, and lighter fluid, materials not permitted under the building's certificate of occupancy. And employees testify they had no formal training handling hazardous materials, emphasizing they were careful but unprepared for the risk. And Kestel was arrested back in April of 2024. He was in New York after authorities learned that he had a plane ticket out of the country. He was trying to get away. Prosecutors say the evidence is now sufficient to take the case to trial. That was a strange and horrible situation.
That poor person was just walking.
Yeah.
Had nothing to do with anything.
Quarter a mile away.
Yeah.
And hit by shrapnel.
Okay, so that's the latest in that case.
Yes.
Interesting news coming out of Netflix. Do you have a Netflix account?
I do.
I do too. Everybody does. Mm-hmm. Netflix is taking its first step into the world of video podcasting. They announced this partnership yesterday with Spotify. Well, actually, it was Tuesday they announced it. And to bring numerous video podcasts on sports, culture, entertainment, true crime, beginning early next year. So would you watch podcasts on your Netflix account?
Yeah, a possibility. Yeah.
So the 16 shows in the deal are produced by Spotify Studios and The Ringer, the website that Bill Simmons has. We love Bill Simmons in our house. The shows include two popular true crime podcasts, Conspiracy Theories and Serial Killers. I don't know what those are.
Okay.
And the Bill Simmons podcast, which is huge.
Yeah.
And Rewatchables, which is something Bill does with some of his people at The Ringer, where they rewatch old movies and talk about it. Executives say that bringing these over to Netflix is something that's been in the works for a long time, that video podcasts are on the rise, and this is what people want to watch. They won't run ads initially. And according to Cumulus Media that we are connected to, they say 72% of podcast listeners say they prefer video when they, you know, listen to these things. So that's why Netflix is getting into the podcast game. I'm wondering if you want to watch.
Listen, Netflix is really getting into a lot of things, you know, other than just movies and streaming movies. They're getting into sports as well. You know, you got NFL games on Netflix. There have been boxing matches, huge boxing matches on Netflix. You know, so kind of takes out the whole pay-per-view type of deal where you used to pay $100 to watch a fight. You know, you got a Netflix account, you're good to go.
I mean, these streaming services are just like growing immensely when it comes to sports and stuff's on Prime and stuff. So like the game last night.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, they're definitely growing in popularity. I wonder if you really want to sit down and watch two people sitting down talking. But I guess people do. I mean, Netflix knows what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, if you're watching, you know, the Housewives.
Well,
I mean, it's not a podcast.
First of all, that is immense entertainment. And I was on a panel yesterday, a women in sports panel, and the question was posed to an NFL executive, someone who works for the Lions, and me, like, what do you do to relax? And I was like, Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, 100%.
Okay.
These ladies are crazy, and it gives you just a little reprieve from, like, the actual heaviness of
a little
news.
A little escapism.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, yes. That's a whole different thing, Lloyd, than watching two people talk about a podcast.
Listen, could an artificial intelligence chat program be the secret to winning the lottery? Well, it was for a Michigan woman who is now $100,000 richer thanks to her tech-savvy approach. 45-year-old Tammy Carvey, she's from Wyandotte, she decided to try her luck when the Powerball jackpot got past $1 billion. That was back in September.
Tell me she won a billion.
No, she didn't win a billion. Okay. No. But instead of picking her own numbers, she went to ChatGPT and she just asked the AI, you know, for a set of Powerball numbers. And then she played them on the Michigan Lottery website on her phone. And she ended up matching four white balls in the Powerball in the September 6th drawing. And she thought she won $50,000. But after logging into her account, she realized she had added the Power Play option, instantly doubling her prize, so she won $100,000. So she was pretty stunned. She told the lottery she and her husband were in total disbelief. And as far as what she's going to do with the winnings, she plans to use the prize money to pay off her house, and then she's going to save the rest.
Wow.
And, you know, listen, it's a pretty smart move, whether it's picked by human or machine. But, I mean, hey, I mean, your chances of winning are...
It's just luck.
It is.
It just happened to work out.
Exactly.
I don't think that using a machine to pick your numbers is like the be-all, end-all.
I mean, because people use easy picks all the time with the lottery machine to pick their numbers.
Right.
I do have some numbers here from ChatGPT that I think I'm going to play for
you. You're going to play today?
Yes. Tomorrow.
Well,
tomorrow,
if you don't come into work on Monday, we'll know if it worked or not.
I'm going to try. We'll see.
Okay. Good luck to you, Lloyd.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We wish you all the best.
Appreciate it.
Coming up next on JR Morning, it's a very big deal, this marathon in Detroit. Thousands, 26,000 runners are going to descend on our area and Windsor. It's international. It's very cool. It's one of the best marathons out there. We're going to talk to someone who's running in it. No, it's not Beth Ann, which we talk to her a lot.
Yes.
And we're proud of you. But it's not Beth Ann, our producer. It's someone else. And that's coming up at 7:49. Big weekend here in downtown Detroit. It's the Free Press Marathon. I don't run, so I don't quite get it, but I appreciate the people who do this hard work. Yes. And people do it for many different reasons. Sometimes it's for charity. Sometimes it's for personal growth and fitness journeys. And it's really inspiring. Today we have Quincy Duggar, runner in the marathon this weekend. Good morning, Quincy. Quincy?
Hear me?
Yep, we can hear you now.
Now we can hear you, and now we are connected. And so you are from Georgia. What made you want to come to Detroit and run?
So I actually have family in Detroit. Granted, I haven't seen them since I was probably 12, but I do have family. But my wife is generous enough to allow me to explore this particular hobby of mine. And what's interesting about Detroit's marathon is that not only does it cross an international border, I also get to run underwater.
Yeah, that's very
true.
Cool.
That's true. Listen, Quincy, you've already completed a journey most people really can't imagine. I mean, you lost 220 pounds going from 440 to where you are today. What was the turning point, that moment when you decided, enough, I got to change my life here?
So it was October of 2011, and I'd gone to get my annual physical. Kids, if you're paying for your health insurance, definitely go. And so I get on the scale at the doctor's office, and I was at 440 pounds. And I've been a big guy a very long time, but I didn't realize I had gotten that heavy. And so I decided at that point that I needed to get my act together.
I mean, and losing that much, mate, I mean, that's not
how'd
just
you do
physical.
It?
Yeah, it's mental, too.
So I don't know if you read the article in the paper, but where I said when your doctor tells you to eat less and move more, you should definitely do that. The short version is I started very, very slowly. I had an exercise bike in my bedroom at the time, and I did about my 2 minutes, did a handful of push-ups, but I was determined to continue down that path. So I kept doing it until the point where I could do it consistently and regularly. And by the time I actually started going to a gym, I was riding the bike for about an hour, and then it sort of caught on like a brush fire at that point.
That is very, very inspiring. Just start small, start each day,
yeah.
And then it builds and builds and builds. To this point where, have you run a marathon before?
Yes, actually, I've run technically two this year already, the Atlanta Public's Marathon back at the beginning of March. And for my birthday, I ran across Atlanta about 27 miles just to see how long it would take me.
Wow. So you are a seasoned runner at this point. And is this your first time in Detroit? Are you excited?
Not my first time in Detroit, but it's my first time as an adult. Like I said earlier, the first time I went to Detroit, I think I was like 12 or 13 for a family reunion. But 30 years ago, Detroit, I'm sure, is a much different place today than it was back then in the 90s.
Oh, absolutely. It has really changed. And Quincy, as someone who's, you've come such a long way personally and physically, does this race kind of feel symbolic of you kind of crossing your own boundaries?
Oh, absolutely. It's where I used to say that I was built for comfort and not for speed. Come to find out that I am genetically predispositioned for speed. Just that being someone who runs a whole bunch was never on the menu. And to think that, oh, yeah, I'm going to fly up to Detroit and go run 26 miles for fun on a Sunday morning. Yeah, I don't know who that person is. Help him, please, somebody.
So I'm sure you've mapped out the course. What are you most looking forward to doing? Is it running under the water, going across the bridge? What is it?
So Atlanta is a very hilly place where we get a quarter mile of elevation change over the course of the Atlanta Public's Marathon. Looking at the map for Detroit by comparison is flat, and I cannot wait to run a flat-ish marathon.
Okay.
And when you line up for the marathon on a Sunday, Quincy, and everything that you've accomplished physically, mentally, emotionally, all of that, what do you think will be going through your mind in those final miles?
Well, the funny thing is, it's something that I've been visualizing now for the past couple of weeks. And so I have a quote unquote curated playlist of songs that I listen to when I run. My start line music is Bring 'Em Out by T.I.
Oh, yeah. Bring 'Em Out. Yes.
And then there's a series of songs that I listen to on my way down the straightaway to the finish line. My song of choice for many, many years has been the Superman theme by John Williams, because
yes.
it's just got that classic feel. There's also a couple from some Japanese composers from video game series that I listen to that are really up-tempo, fast-paced, percussion-heavy.
And it depends on where I am in my playlist at that point in time, but it's just, it's all business. Once I get to the start line, my heart rate increases. I'm visualizing who it is I'm going to beat in the race. Probably not everybody, but there's always one or two people that I'm chasing down just because it helps keep me motivated.
And when you look back at the man, Quincy, who once weighed 400 pounds, and you look ahead to the man crossing that finish line in Detroit, what do you say to your past self?
I wish I had a good answer for that, because I look back at a lot of the choices I made in life back then, and I can't help but wonder what I was thinking. But I have to say, having the support of my wife to get me to where I am today, her love and support have been invaluable. And it's nice to know that God put her in my path for it.
Wow.
Well, that's beautiful.
What a great story.
We wish you all the best on October 19th here in our city. And I can't wait for bring them out. Good luck, Quincy.
Thank you much.
What are you going to listen to, Beth Ann, at the starting line?
I haven't even thought of that yet. He is so far ahead of me. I think I need to, like, I will take any suggestions you guys could give me.
Well, how about T.I.?
I know. I think I need to add that to the list.
Start me up and never stop.
Well,
the Rolling Stones. Yeah, start me up.
Okay. That's a good one.
I like that, Lloyd. I like it.
You're going to have to put a playlist together.
Yeah,
I know.
Got to.
I need to, because I'm like a podcast listener when I'm running. It like keeps my brain not focusing on like the pain.
Lots of podcasts to listen to on WJR.
Exactly.
Okay, so you listen to talking, maybe not so much music?
Yeah, I'm kind of like, it depends on my mood, but especially when I'm long distance running, I love listening to podcasts. It just makes the time go by so much quicker.
All right. Well, we wish Quincy all the best. We wish Beth Ann all the best.
Absolutely.
Running those 26.2 miles.
Can't leave that up.
Yes. And if you're coming downtown, there's some road closures to keep an eye out for, so.
And coming up also, we're going to be talking to a doctor, because once you run this marathon, you got to try to get yourself back in order again. That's a lot on your body.
Well, clearly people do it. They do multiple marathons.
Sure they do.
Yeah. So we'll talk to a doctor for the regular folk. We're like, what do we do? Plus, we're going to talk a lot about the news, no kings, and John Bolton in trouble. It is a beautiful Friday morning in Detroit.
It is. And we'll get a little bit of summer tomorrow.
The sun is shining. I think there might be a little bit of wet weather, but hopefully the runners coming into town and running on Sunday are going to be dry.
Going to be dry, yeah.
Yeah. So we wish all the runners, 26,000 of them,
all the
best.
A lot of runners and a lot of miles. You think about 26 miles?
26.2.
I'm sorry. My bad.
Yes.
0.2. I mean, you think about 26 miles in your car. Takes you a little bit, right?
It takes you a long time, and I'm going 80 miles an hour.
Right.
I mean, sorry.
Did you just bust yourself?
Lieutenant Shaw, I'm going 65.
You know, what do you say? 5, you're fine. 9, you're mine.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Got it.
So, okay.
I'm also looking at a copy of Mitch Albom's book twice. I'm very excited to read
this. Yes. Thank you, Mitch, for that.
Thank you, Mitch, for leaving us some books.
Yeah.
You know, Netflix thought enough of it to...
make it a movie.
Yeah, so I cannot wait to read this. Excited for that too. So that's something on the agenda for this weekend. Yesterday, the Justice Department indicted John Bolton for handling classified information. So he's the latest Trump critic to face prosecution. But a lot of analysts are saying this is different than James Comey and Tish James. This started the investigation into Bolton before Trump's return to the White House. And it's all about classified documents. Prosecutors say in court papers that Bolton shared with two relatives more than 1,000 pages of diary-like entries that contain classified information about his daily activities as national security advisor. He'd send these entries electronically, sometimes on his private AOL, which is something a 76-year-old would do on AOL, right? And Google email accounts.
Yeah.
And the documents do not identify who he was sending it to. But it also says that more classified information was exposed when his email account was hacked by Iranian hackers. So he's facing 18 counts. He could go to prison for this in Maryland federal court, and we'll have to wait and see what happens here.
A little different than, like you said, Letitia James and James Comey when it comes to him possibly trying to get it thrown out because of malicious prosecution. You know, the president did not name him, even though they're not on good terms. He did not name him in that Truth Social post that he put out to Pam Bondi. Also, the prosecution, the prosecutor is different, too, as far as experience with, you know, situations.
Well,
like
career
this.
Prosecutors were concerned about the Comey and James cases.
Yeah.
And no one even signed on to the Comey case except for the one lady that was
exactly.
put into place. But they view this one as being stronger.
Yeah.
So okay. we'll wait and see on that. The U.S. military hit another boat in the Caribbean. Did you see this?
Yeah.
And then there are questions of who are the people on these boats? Are they actually Venezuelans, drug traffickers?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people in Colombia are saying, though, there were some of our citizens on there. Some Trinidad and Tobago folks are saying, no, there are some of our citizens on there. So I think this story will continue for sure.
Is this, you know, a prelude to regime change? Because of Maduro, because he's a dictator. He's not a,
he's not a nice guy.
No, he's
not. Trump would say.
You're right.
Yeah.
Not a nice guy.
It seems like things are pointing in that direction. And then is this related? We don't know. The head of the U.S. military's Southern Command is stepping down. His name is Admiral Alvin Holsley. He's leaving less than a year into his tenure. And this is all while these attacks on these Caribbean boats are escalating. Now, there's no reason for him cited here of why. It could be family related. It could be health related. Or it could be him being pushed out because he has voiced concern over this. So, again, another thing to keep an eye on.
The owner of the Clinton Township building that exploded last year, killing a 19-year-old man, he's been ordered to stand trial for involuntary manslaughter. The judge ruled yesterday following preliminary hearings that were held over several months. They have enough evidence, they say now, to advance Noel Kestel's case. This happened back in March of 2024, an explosion at a building housing goo and select distributors. It sent mental shrapnel flying up to a mile away, and Turner Salter, he's a 19-year-old, he's just a quarter of a mile from the blast. He was struck and killed by shrapnel. Investigators say the building contained nitrous oxide and butane canisters and lighter fluid, which were materials that were not permitted under the building's certificate of occupancy. And employees testified that they had no formal training handling these hazardous materials, but they were pretty careful but unprepared for the risk. And Castile was arrested in New York in 2024, after authorities learned that he had bought a plane ticket. He was about to leave the country. And prosecutors say the evidence is now sufficient enough to take this case to trial.
That case was very sad for that innocent bystander that's walking down the street.
And having all of these, you know, nitrous oxide and butane canisters and lighter fluid in a building.
Right. Why?
I mean, that's, oh, yeah. Also, there's this new audit of the Michigan Sex Offender Registry. It has uncovered some significant accuracy issues, including thousands of incorrect addresses for registered offenders. The report released yesterday by the Office of the Attorney, the Auditor General, reviewed the state's database, which tracks nearly 44,000 offenders as of July 2024. In a random sample of 60 registrants, 9% had addresses that didn't match their state ID records, a discrepancy that could affect more than 2,700 people statewide. The Michigan State Police acknowledged that they only verify addresses when offenders first register or move to or from the state, and there is currently no legal requirement to cross-check addresses with other government databases. MSP says it agrees with many of the audit's findings and is exploring ways to improve the accuracy of the registry to better protect the public. Somebody needs to do something. It needs to be a law, something. They need to continue to follow these people.
What is the point of a registry if it's inaccurate and you don't know where they live?
Exactly.
Why bother? And what prevents people from just registering and then moving?
And moving. Yeah, absolutely.
That makes no sense.
No. You got to keep up.
At all.
You got to keep up.
Big day at the White House. Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine is set to meet President Trump.
And, I bet you'll have a suit on.
We'll see what he's wearing and if he's questioned about it. But there's a momentum here, at least Zelensky thinks so, from the peace in the Mideast.
Yes.
He's thinking maybe this could help his conflict with Russia. The president talked to Putin yesterday.
Yeah.
And obviously the talk of the Tomahawk missiles, I'm sure, was discussed.
Got him on the phone.
Did that dim the chances of the U.S. sending Tomahawks to Ukraine? We don't know. These are all behind the scenes.
They said the president was a little noncommittal yesterday after he had that talk with Putin.
Well, yeah, Putin made a phone call after he heard Tomahawk missiles.
Yes.
So there's this meeting with the Ukrainian president today. We'll see if he can solve another war.
Hey, let's go for it.
It is the 10-year anniversary of one of the craziest games ever at Michigan Stadium.
You were there, right?
I was there. It was unbelievable. You think one outcome is going to happen. Michigan's going to win the game.
Sure.
They just have to take the snap and punt it away.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
That announcer, boy, he was, wow.
He also was, you know, very excited to see that. He was like, what am I watching?
Right.
That's how I felt. That's how I felt. And I have a cameraman at the time. His name is Mike Tissio. He's my guy still. He still works Channel 4.
Okay.
He went to Michigan State, and he's on the sidelines filming this. And this is the outcome he would want. And I saw him. I walked over to him. He looked like he saw a ghost.
Pale. It just, oh, wow.
It was crazy. And I talked to Jalen Watts Jackson a bunch after he returned that for the touchdown. And then they all, like, jumped on him. He hurt himself very badly.
Oh, after they jumped
After they jumped on him. I think it was a hip injury. But, you know, it doesn't hurt that bad when you beat Michigan again.
Exactly. In
that
the way
was
you
the
did
D'Antonio
it.
Era, the Harbaugh era.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. It was such a great game.
Wow.
Whether you're a fan of either team.
No, it was
That's just an exciting.
It's just exciting and something that, you know, maybe happens once in a lifetime.
I wonder what Michigan punter Blake O'Neill is doing these days. Let's get him on the phone.
Give him a call.
Let's find him. All right, coming up next on JR Morning, we're going to continue to talk about the marathon and what it means for these runners' bodies and how they recover after running 26.2 miles. Plus, we have to talk about this mobile app, your chance to win game day in the D. You can come when Detroit hosts New York Sunday, November 23rd at Ford Field. You can win tickets, transportation courtesy of MetroCars, $100 to dine at Buddy's Pizza. To enter, download the free WJR mobile app, find the secret keyword, and then text it to 800-859-0957. That's an exciting thing when Detroit hosts New York. For more information, go to WJR.com.
All right, there it is. Hey, you know, once the Free Press Marathon is in the books this weekend, you know, thousands of runners, you know, going to be feeling the effects. I mean, 26.2 miles. Jamie always makes me put the two in there because that makes a difference from the sore muscles to fatigue and everything in between. You know, recovery is just as important as the race itself in helping athletes heal and refuel and prevent injury. Joining us with some expert advice on how to bounce back the right way is Stephanie Heiser. She's physical therapist with Henry Ford Health Sports Medicine. Stephanie, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I am good. You know, once the race is over, for many runners, you know, the real challenge begins the next day. You know, so what are some of the first signs that your body needs attention after running 26.2 miles?
Usually people are pretty sore. If you haven't done a marathon yet, you're about to find out how to navigate stairs post-marathon. So that's usually the big challenge, is being able to go down the stairs normally. And that's a big sign that you're pretty sore and beat up from it, which, like you said, you're running 26.2 miles. So that indicates that you need to rest and back off on running for a little bit and rebuild and take care of your body for a few weeks.
People who don't run long distances, like myself and some others out there, might be like, is this good for someone's body to do this? And the people that run multiple marathons a year?
Yes, running a marathon is great for your body. It's good for your cardiovascular system. It's good for your bones and joints. I do think that some people overdo it in the realm of marathon running. Usually we recommend running a marathon in the spring and a marathon in the fall because you want to recover after your marathon and then you want to rebuild your miles and then be able to have enough time to start training again. So we do see some people that get into trouble when they're running several marathons a year and not taking enough time off.
When it comes to recovery, though, what should runners do, let's say, the first 24, 48 hours after they finish a marathon?
So immediately after the marathon, you really want to focus on refueling, and that includes hydration. Oftentimes water is not enough, so you want to add some electrolytes to your water, and refueling with carbs, protein, fats, focus on all the macros. A lot of times your metabolism is elevated for a couple of days, so you might be hungry for a couple of days after the marathon. And sleep is also really important, and if anybody listening has done a hard workout, they may have experienced that it's difficult to sleep after a hard workout or a race. So you want to focus on good sleep habits, like stay off social media for a couple hours before you try and go to sleep, power down your phone. If you're having trouble relaxing, you can try meditation, that kind of thing. So those are probably the biggest things within the first day or two that you really want to focus on.
How do you protect your knees and your joints if you're a big runner?
Well, because I'm a physical therapist.
That's why I thought you would be the perfect person for this question.
Yes. So we are really big fans of strength training. And a lot of times runners are lacking in the strength department. And some of it has to do with time. Like if you're training for a marathon, you're probably running at least 35 miles a week in the thick of it, if not more. And so usually the first thing to go is strength training and mobility work. So you want to make sure that your muscles and your joints are staying mobile and that you're adding some resistance, especially for hip strengthening, quad strengthening, calf strengthening. And a lot of times runners will also think that body weight training is enough resistance, and that's not usually the case. You want to be able to lift more than your body weight because when you're running, you're absorbing more than your body weight.
You know, there's a lot of advice out there, Stephanie, you know, ice baths and you know, stretching, massage guns, compression sleeves. What actually works and what's more of like a myth than medicine?
So to my knowledge, none of those things have super strong evidence that they will help speed up your recovery. However, we encourage runners to do what feels good. So if you're doing compression boots after a workout and you feel like it helps you recover a little bit faster, then go ahead and do it. It's not going to hurt anything. For ice baths, you do want to be a little bit careful because part of being sore after a workout or a marathon helps your body to adapt. And those adaptations will help you be more durable and they'll also help you be faster. So if you overdo it on anti-inflammatory things like ibuprofen, ice bath, even something like too much turmeric, it can impede those adaptations. So it's okay to do it. You just want to make sure that you're not doing it excessively and every time after you're working out.
Oh, and how can someone tell, Stephanie, the difference between like soreness that will fade, you know, because people are going to be sore after a race and with rest, and then pain that means they need to maybe go see a physical therapist?
This is a really good question. And we find that a lot of runners struggle with this, especially if they're new to running. If you are experiencing pain that is changing your running gait or even walking, like sometimes people will start walking with a limp, then it is definitely time to see a medical professional and start physical therapy. And sometimes a good indication is if it's only on one side. If only your right knee is sore, then there's probably something going on where you're having a muscle imbalances. Either your hips are tight, your hips are weak, your ankles are tight and weak, and they're beating up one side of your body. So if you're noticing some things that are uneven, or if you're noticing pain, then it's definitely time to see a medical professional.
Beth Ann, you have any questions for her? We have a runner in our midst.
Yeah.
Oh, you honestly hit everything that I was literally thinking in my head, hoping and crossing my fingers they were going to ask you for.
Oh, good.
Okay. Well, then we got it covered. Stephanie Heiser.
Yeah, physical therapist with Henry Ford Health Sports Medicine. We appreciate you coming on and giving us some tips on how we can recuperate after 26.2 miles.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
We have a little medical update on Jaden Ivey the Pistons. He underwent arthroscopic procedure yesterday to relieve right knee discomfort, which is such a bummer because he had that fibula injury last season.
Right.
The Pistons are saying it is not related to that. It's separate. He will begin the rehabilitation process immediately. He'll be reevaluated in 4 weeks. So now the Pistons don't have this guy for a month. They start the season on October 22nd at Chicago. Then they're at Houston. They finally will begin the home opener on Sunday, October 26th against Boston at 3:30. But Jaden Ivey out for a month, which is a bummer at the beginning of the season.
It is. But they've been doing pretty good in the preseason, though. They've looked pretty good.
It's been hit or miss.
Yeah.
2-2 in the preseason. Sure. I mean, the record doesn't matter. But,
no.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just, you know, even in the losses they were playing, you know, I thought pretty good. It's a lot to look forward to. Coming up on JR Morning, as we know, the Lions will be playing on Monday night against Tampa. But there's some other NFL games going on this weekend we need to talk about. And who who better to talk to us about it than Lomas Brown. He'll be here next at 8:35 on JR Morning.
I wonder if Chris can watch the Lions in Italy.
Well,
with the internet, I'm sure he can.
Listen, you know, NFL is, you know, overseas now, doing games over there.
Because
there
are big games all weekend long. I'm sure he can. We're going to talk about all the big games over the weekend with Lomas Brown during Inside the Huddle, sponsored by CNC Heating and Air Conditioning. Call 800-MY-FURNACE or visit cncheat.com. Let's bring in Lomas Brown now. Obviously, the color analyst for the Detroit Lions Radio Network. He co-hosts Sports Wrap right here on WJR. Good morning to you, Lomas.
Hey.
I love when you bring the hey. Let's start with the Thursday night game, shall we? Because the Steelers did not do what I wanted them to do.
Yeah, Jamie, and I was thinking about you, too, last night. And I just could not believe how Cincinnati was able to establish the run against Pittsburgh. Doesn't look like the Pittsburgh are old, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, it's amazing how we thought Pittsburgh was going to run away with that division. Now it's amazing just how competitive that division seems to going to be. So, yeah, I know you were a little disappointed. Like I say, the big fella was thinking about you.
Loa, one of the games that I was that I'm looking forward to actually this weekend is the Eagles and the Vikings. I mean, I think that could be a pretty good matchup. You got Jalen Hurts and Kirk Cousins going at it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in that game. I mean, the Philadelphia team, the defending champions, you know, it's been a lot of criticism of that offense and what they've been doing, a lot of bickering going on over there. And they, quite frankly, need to win this game. I don't know if J.J. McCarthy's going to play this game, but, again, Carson Wentz is there. So we'll see what he'll be able to do with the Minnesota Vikings. You know I'm pulling for Minnesota to win that game because that will help us out with Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I think we can handle Minnesota, but I'm pulling for them to win this game this weekend.
We're talking with Lomas Brown about some other games because the Lions play on Monday.
Yeah.
It's like a long way away, so
yeah.
We might as well discuss, you know, some of the other games. The Rams are 4-2. What do you think about Matthew Stafford's play in the Rams up to date?
I mean, he's been good. I mean, he has been good, Jamie. I mean, I don't know if Puka Nacua is going to play. I know he's been dealing with an ankle injury. But Matthew's been good. He's been spreading the ball around to all the other weapons that he has on that team. Of course, with Sean McVay there, the genius, as they call him, calling plays. I think they're going to be a threat. I mean, they're trying to win that division. You know, they got a beat-up San Francisco team in that same division. So, and the Arizona team that we don't know what they're going to be. So, I think Matthew's been playing at a pretty high level, not at a Jared Goff level, but he's been playing at a pretty high level and have those guys set to try to win that division.
The Chiefs playing at home against the Raiders. Raiders not that great, but, hey, Patrick Mahomes has had to work a little harder than usual this season, though.
Yeah, he has, and, you know, outside of the refs giving him a little help. Yeah, they have had to play a little harder, but I'm telling you, Lloyd, I think they're going to get on the roll now. Like I say, man, watching him up close and personal that last game against us, man, that guy, he's on another level. Seemed like the Chiefs are getting their feet up under them, and it seems like it's the same old Chiefs team, so – the Raiders, I mean, they're the Raiders. They're out in Vegas now, but nothing had changed. That's a team that's struggling right now, and Geno is killing them with the turnover. So, I look at the Chiefs winning that game.
You know, we were very concerned about our coordinators leaving. What do you think about what's going on with Aaron Glenn and the Jets?
Yes.
They're winless. It makes me feel bad for Aaron Glenn because he was a nice guy.
I do, Jamie. I really do, man. I want AG to get a win. I want him to have success there. And it seems like, you know, the guys seem like they're still with him, but he doesn't have nothing to work with. Think about the Jets team. You're talking about Justin Fields, who threw for 45 yards. You add the sacks in there, it was like, what, minus 10 yards.
I've never seen anything like that. And the only weapon that they have offensively is Garrett Wilson. You know, I'm just hoping that the owner, and we know that owner could be a little flaky.
Yep.
I'm just hoping that he gives Aaron a chance to bring in some talent and to try to turn that organization around, because Aaron doesn't have much to work with right now, and I want AG to have success. I really, really feel bad for him right now.
Our other coordinator with the Bears, they take on the Saints. They both trying to, you know, find some rhythm on that offense.
Yeah. But Ben has Caleb Williams playing good. I mean, he's playing a lot better. He looks a lot better. He looked like he might turn out to be what they thought he was, drafting him as the number one pick. Chicago's won a few games in a row. When you do that, that builds confidence in your team. And, you know, like I say, Ben seems to have the ears of those guys on that team. And the Saints, dealing with another one of our old offensive coordinators, they're not a good team either. They're just not a good team. So I'm looking at the Bears to probably keep this thing rolling. And, yeah, it's going to be a tough out when we have to face the Bears again in Soldier Field.
All right, we can get into some Lions talk, do a little preview. So they're on Monday night. Yours truly doing sports wrap with Steve Courtney, because Lomas Brown's going to be so busy inside the stadium. So that's going to be fun on Monday night. What should I talk about on Monday, Lomas, about this matchup?
Well, I think the thing, Jamie, we're going to have to see. Strength on strength, Jamie, meaning Tampa Bay has a very good run defense, with, of course, led by Vita Vea in the middle of that run defense. And we know that's what we want to do is to run the ball. So it's going to be strength on strength. Who's able to control the line of scrimmage? And the other thing to look at is our secondary.
Right.
As you know, Brian Branch won't be there. We don't know about Kirby Joseph, but we know we're missing all our cornerbacks right now. And I'll tell people this. Even if Baker Mayfield doesn't have all his wide receiver weapons, the offense still has an advantage because they know where they're going. They know the play. They know where they're going. Mm-hmm. On defense, you have to react. So that gives the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensively an advantage over us. So look for Calvin Shepard to make all kind of adjustments and bring all kind of pressure on Baker Mayfield to get him off his spot.
All right, Lomas, big Monday night game coming up with the Lions. Of course, we will be tuning in to you, listening to you on the radio, and I'll be handling sports wrap, and I'll go, hey, when I open it all up.
I appreciate that, Jamie.
I just got to keep the vibes the same.
Yeah.
All right, this was Inside the Huddle with Lomas Brown. We appreciate it, Lom.
Thanks. Take care.
See you, Lomas.
Okay, bye, Lomas. And we'll talk to Lomas again Monday morning.
Yes,
so we'll get
will.
More insight into that Monday night matchup. Coming up, what to do around Metro Detroit. Plus, we have a little sweet deal to share with you all at 8:49.
Welcome back to JR Morning. We are always looking for something adventurous, something different to do for the weekend around Metro Detroit. And we always go to our mainstay, Jer Stays. He's host of the Daily Detroit podcast to tell us what's happening this weekend. Good morning, Jer.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
It's a beautiful day.
Excellent.
Yes.
Yes, yes. So I've got a few different things for you this weekend. The first one is family friendly for all, but also if you're a special kind of nerd, and I am one of those special kind of nerds, which is a train nerd, there is the Train Expo at the Outdoor Adventure Center. And that's on Detroit's riverfront, right across from Milliken State Park. And that's going to be tomorrow. Well, it technically starts today, but tomorrow from 11 to 3, there's four different railroad clubs getting together, and they're going to get into Detroit's railroad history. And then on top of that, there's a children's performance if you're bringing your kids as well, like a clown and things like that too. So two kinds of fun stuff, family-friendly, and into a little bit of Detroit history, too.
Excellent. And that place is great to take your kids to jump around and run around.
Yes, run that energy off.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And just Detroit's riverfront is beautiful, beautiful now. Then, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the Detroit Zoo has their Zoo Boo thing going on. They've got slots from 4 to 8 p.m. You know, it's right at that dusk time. It's a great place to take the family out to. They do everything up really nice. Every event I've ever been to at the Detroit Zoo has been all out. So, I mean, if it's something that you want to dive into, I think it's great, you know, bring the kids, bring the family. It's just one of Metro Detroit's just super special places and super centrally located too, being in Royal Oak, you know? So I always want to highlight that. And then on Sunday at 2:30 p.m. is a Murals in the Market walking tour in Eastern Market. Jason Hall is the guy who runs Slow Roll. I don't know if you've seen that giant bike ride that happens every week. Well, he hosts this tour that's going to be on Sunday afternoon. You're going to want to check it out because there's been more than 125 murals put up in Eastern Market. And listen, I live in the city. I'm down there all the time, and I don't even know them all. So this is the kind of thing that even I'm going to want to go on and check out because Jason knows every single corner, and it's a great way to support the work that they're doing too.
All right. JR, is that it for the weekend?
I think so, but, you know, you can always – keep an eye out for things.
Or if you want to go watch some runners.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, you always kind of tap me for the out-of-the-way stuff.
Yes.
And I think you do an excellent job.
You
always bring some really cool stuff. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, I've got friends who are going to be out there bringing cider and things for the runners that are going to be going by their house. It's such a Detroit tradition if you're a resident to support that.
It is.
Great.
Perfect.
We appreciate it. Thanks, Jer. See you next week.
Absolutely. Yep. Take care.
Okay.
All right, and we're not done yet here on JR Morning because we have some excellent food that eating. It's delicious Cuban food. Joe Tinpan, manager and marketing director of Vicente's Cuban Cuisine, is with us. Good morning.
Good morning to you guys both.
We got to put your
good morning to you both. I'm sorry.
Good morning.
What did you bring for us? Because you're here because there's another WJR sweet deal.
Yes, I brought you guys is something called a rose con pollo. It's a chicken and rice dish.
Oh my goodness!
And so good. And then I brought you guys some Cuban sandwiches, and we have a lot of different options. Everybody's so far, like, raving about the food in the other room.
The sandwich is impeccable.
Oh.
Yep. And then that's, I mean, if you guys wanted to come check us out, like he was talking about things to do on the weekend, uh-huh. Friday and Saturday nights, we have salsa dancing from 9 p.m. to midnight on Fridays and Saturdays. Every Friday and Saturday, we got drink specials going on. We have a lot of vegetarian options as well, gluten-free options. We're known for our seafood paella, and my favorites are usually the chicken dishes. We have a pollo con camarones, a chicken and shrimp bake. It's like an incredible like flavor bomb in your mouth. As soon as you take that first bite, I can just imagine like your reaction to be like, oh my God, you know, and then that's like one of my favorites. And then we have a lemon chicken dish, a pollo limón.
Lemon chicken. That is me.
Yep.
Love me some.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You get two full blown chicken breasts with that dish. It's one of our top sellers. I always recommend that to everybody. But, you know, there is also a gigantic event space there, too, that a lot of people come and host their birthday parties, engagement parties, stuff like that down there.
Oh, man.
Well, the WJR sweet deal is you spend $25, but you get $50 worth of food, and you go to WJR.com/sweet deals. You click on the sweet deal, and it takes you right to where you need to go. Where is your restaurant? You are in the heart of downtown.
We're at 1250 Library Street. We're right next to Moot's Pizza, right across the street from the Hudson Building.
Oh, yeah.
The library, right?
Yep, on Library Street, right next to the Gucci store, mm-hmm. Citizen Yoga. We're all on the same street. There's plenty of street parking right there. You can come check us out before the Lions game, you know, before or after the Lions games on the weekends. We usually have specials going on the game days as well.
And, you know, I mean, promotions like this, you know, really a great way to bring in, you know, new customers and the ones who come all the time gives them a great deal as well.
Yes, it sure does. Yep. There's a lot of people that have told us they've been going there for years, but then, you know, after COVID, you know, a lot of people weren't going out as much, and now they've been coming back out the last few years, and they're like, oh yeah, I haven't been there in forever, but I used to go all the time.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And we're bringing them all back in, and that's what's kind of been happening.
Where did these recipes come from?
So there was a Cuban family that owned it, and it was his mom's recipes.
Okay.
And everything was his mom's original recipe from Cuba. And then that's the tradition that they've just been carrying on and keeping it going with that.
You know, okay. It's funny because Chef Bobby was in yesterday and he was talking about some of his mom's recipes. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I like when history like that is passed down because this rice is delicious.
It's so mm-hmm. good. It's so good. And, you know, the city is just, you know, really humming right now with all the different, you know, tastes you can get downtown now.
Oh, yeah. It's been down there. I believe it's almost 22 years that Vicente's has been down there.
Wow.
Yep.
Are you going to be busy on Monday night for that Lions game?
We usually... I think that we usually do get a big crowd on the Monday night games. We usually get a big crowd before the game because by the time it ends, we're closed.
Close, yeah.
Yep. But on Sundays, we get the crowd before and after, you know, right. When it's like the 1 o'clock or the 4 o'clock games.
And there's more salsa dancing if they win.
Yes. Yes, there will be. Yeah. We'll do a special event just for that.
Listen, I like the mix of salsa dancing and like,
mojito.
And mojito. Hey.
Yes.
That works for me.
And Marie.
Yes.
Salsa, mojito, and Marie. That's all Lloyd needs.
That's yep. it. That's it. And I have a good day.
I think there's like 6 or 7 different mojito flavors as well. The passion fruit is one of my favorites. Ooh, oh, I don't know goodness. If you guys like
it. I didn't know there were several different.
I didn't either, but yeah. We're going to find out.
Yep. All right. Well, we appreciate it. One more time, you can go to WJR.com/sweetdeals to get this sweet deal from Vicente's Cuban Cuisine. Spend $25, but you get $50. It's
yes.
a great deal. Thank you, Joe, for coming in and bringing us this delicious cuisine.
Thank you. We appreciate you guys having us.
Perfect. All right, Lloyd. Well, it's been a week.
It's been a week.
Go Without Lions. Chris. Yeah. Chris is hopefully enjoying his European adventure.
Yeah.
Lions on Monday night, so we'll still preview that game on Monday morning.
It's getting hot in here.
Oh, we got a little bit of Chris in there.
It's almost like we miss him singing in the studio. And also, maybe President Trump can move the needle a little bit here with this conflict, Ukraine and Russia, and we'll see what happens. So we'll recap all of that when Lloyd and I see you bright and early Monday morning.